It's fascinating to me that in our society, we're able to literally spend all of the money that we make right down to zero without any software, without any tracking, without any budget or program. It's absolutely fascinating. And so I know that our subconscious is like somehow pre-programmed to be able to spend all of the available cash. So the trick that we have to do is we have to trick our subconscious into thinking there's less cash.
Well, hey there. If we have not yet met, my name is Alex Jed. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. And this podcast is just another iteration of how that mission comes to life. Well, we're jumping into part two of my conversation with Jeff Soha. And this entire conversation is going to be focused on five pillars, five specific strategies that he's learned through his time running a fractional family office firm and now also building Soha Capital to be a really, just incredibly effective and influential organization in just under 2 years. He's going to take everything that he's learned from working with entrepreneurs, leaders around the country, and distill it down into five things that we can practically focus on in order to make sure that we're building wealth well and then specifically stewarding it responsibly. This is such a practical conversation. So make sure that you're listening to it, thinking through the lens of, okay, what is going to be the thing that I'm prepared and ready to take action on? Here's part two of my conversation with Jeff Soha.
Yeah. So let's just talk about cash flow. So, you know, who's forecasting into the future to make sure your investments in the business, tax opportunities that you have, that you've got a good plan, you know, and who knows the plan, you know, what does your cash flow look like next month and 6 months, 12 months, you know, the income, expenses, where it's going, the challenge in cash flow, especially for entrepreneurs, is there's real tension here. As an entrepreneur, especially, I think this is most humans, but especially with entrepreneurs, you have more ideas and opportunities than you have time and money to pursue. So we have to get really good at figuring out what we're going to say no to. If you could imagine a timeline and money comes in present day, there's really only, to me, three things we can do with the money that comes in today. We can consume it right now, which is usually the most fun thing. Hey, let's go on vacation, let's throw a party, let's buy this, let's do that, right? Let's live it up. But sometimes we've also made decisions in the past where we felt like we needed something or we're entitled to something that we didn't have the money for. And so we have to sort of send the money to the past because we took out debt for a car we wanted or something we thought we needed it so bad we had to put it on a credit card or whatever. We had to send it to the past. The third thing that we can do, which is usually the last thing that people want to do, but it's really the thing that's going to make the biggest difference, is how do we send it to the future so that the next time that we need something, we have the money to actually pay for it. Novel concept, you know, but we have to have that discipline and self-control to say, no, I'm not going to consume it today. And I'm not going to go take from my future self. I'm going to actually send some money out there.
So, and so when you're addressing cash flow with business owners, are you both saying the cash flow of their business entity and cash flow in their personal lives?
Yeah, all of it.
What are the actions associated with this? Like if people are, you know, obviously we're probably not talking to anyone that's just getting started in that arena, but what are actions that you would say people should take just to be really intentional with the way they're evaluating cash flow and the way they're considering cash flow?
Yeah. So first let's think, you know, it's probably helpful to get organized. I'm going to give you two action items here on cash flow. Okay. So the first one is just get yourself a simple Excel spreadsheet, you know, across the top, put January, February, March, whatever the next 12 months. And then on over here, put down, you know, sort of what you expect your income to be, maybe what your actual income, irregular income, lifestyle taxes, you know, and then the bottom can say wealth building, and we can sort of plot out the next 12 months of what does our cash flow look like? And at the bottom, we could just have like ending cash balance. So we can think, oh, okay, well, in 6 months, I should have the liquidity to go do the thing that I think I need to do. And we can get more intentional about the timing and planning. And that, you know, you could have a super simple tool. It doesn't need to be complicated. So I would do that to get yourself organized around cash flow. And then the second thing is, this is like probably the biggest psychological hack. If you want to really grow your wealth, just like, this is probably one of the best things. So if you didn't do anything besides this, you'll be in a better place in the future. But it's fascinating to me that we can, in our society, we're able to literally spend all of the money that we make right down to zero without any software, without any tracking, without any budget or program. It's absolutely fascinating. And so I know that our subconscious is like somehow pre-programmed to be able to spend all of the available cash. So the trick that we have to do is we have to trick our subconscious into thinking there's less cash. So How do we do that? Let's forget this month, because this month we've got all sorts of reasons / excuses for why it is the way it is. Let's think about next month when everything goes according to plan, next month when everything happens the way it's supposed to. In that state, how much discretionary cash flow could we set aside? Take that amount and then automate it. Get it out of your primary bank. Your primary bank is where you log in more than anything else. And that's the number the subconscious is going to see. And the subconscious, and this is different for everybody, has some sort of level where it thinks that you have more than enough money or extra money, or you have plenty of money. And so we want to sort of keep that primary bank balance low enough that our subconscious never really feels like we have extra. Because when our subconscious kicks in and says we have extra, it turns and it processes all of the marketing messages coming to us, and it filters and sorts by, well, we have this much available and here's the best things we can do with it. And then next thing you know, we're on a plane to, you know, the Mediterranean, and it's great. So automate, look at next month. What could you do next month if you had to? Automate it, get it out, move it. I don't care. You know, like we use Schwab. Okay, set up a Schwab money market and just move it there, because you're not looking at it. You're looking at your bank, right? That will literally change your life, especially if you feel like you're not good at setting aside liquidity. So those are two action items there for you on cash flow.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Like you even referred to it as a hack, right? It's a tactic. It's a technique. It's not actually changing anything, but it sounds like you have the evidence to suggest, like, it sounds like you're saying, like, I dare you. Just see how it affects your mind and therefore your actions. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't have to hire an advisor. You don't have to pay anybody. It won't cost you anything, but it will change your financial life if you do.
Very cool.
And how do you know if you're automating enough? It needs to hurt just a tiny little bit. If you don't feel it, it's not enough. And if you find yourself 3 days later having to go pull some back, well, then you're probably too much. So somewhere in the middle. So now that we've got a way to capture and build up our liquidity, what are we going to do with it? So that's where we start to have to get into that investment conversation, right? And how do you know? How do you know what to invest in? Like, should you be setting up these qualified plans or cryptocurrency, real estate, private equity? I don't know. And who's going to manage it all? How do you track it? And how do you put this plan together? And, you know, are you paying taxes on the investments? Because you might be able to do it where you don't have to. And, you know, there was this person came to me one time and she was just like, Jeff, I just want to know what to invest in. I was like, I don't know. And she got real frustrated. She said, just tell me, if I give you $1 million today, what are you going to do with it? I said, I give it back to you. Like, that made her even more frustrated. And the deal is oftentimes we're looking for what we really like secretly want. You know, we want that winning lottery ticket. We want somebody to be like, just tell me the hot stock that's about to go up 500%, you know? And if we knew how to do that, we probably wouldn't be on this podcast in the first place. So, and I think anybody that tells you they can do that can't. So let's just forget that whole get rich quick, you know, winning lottery ticket shortcut, you know, scheme and go, okay, like this is back to the boring backstage stuff. What is your family investment policy statement? Do you have one? You know, is it documented? Is it followed? You know, something that says, here are my values and my goals, and here's what I'm going to do with my money and why. And having that document, it gives us a chance of having that self-control and discipline when we're challenged or scared or before making a big change. We can go consult that plan, right? And absent of that, what happens is we have two primary emotions. And when things are going good, we feel like we're missing out and we got to get in on the action. And that's our greed driving us. We're hardwired to seek more of what gives us security and pleasure, right? And then things start going down and our fear kicks in. And we think, I got to get out. You know, we're hardwired to get away as fast as we can from stuff that causes us pain. So we're sort of chasing these things at the peaks and running away in the valleys. And we just repeat that cycle until we're broke. Hmm. So, you know, we need to do like Warren Buffett says, be fearful when everyone is greedy and greedy when everyone is fearful. We sort of almost got into this subject, but we have to think about like how wealthy people think. Learn how to become wealthy. Successful people manage their money successfully. And think about that word manage. Your money has to have a job. Like you have to create a job for it. So what is that job description? Do you have one, you know? So when you think about all of that, I think the main thing here is this is the action in your investing part of your life. This is the second thing. Write out your family investment policy statement. Or get help to create one that says, why is your money invested the way it is? What are the goals and principles? What is the strategy or design? What is the time frame? How are we going to execute and how are we going to maintain it? That's what I would share about that second pillar.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's really personally, practically helpful. And I think that's a really good action item as well. I want to run an example by you just to see if we're grabbing this right, and then see if there's any advice you have on how we would run this example out. Just for myself personally, I just got married 7 months ago and we are still very much in the honeymoon phase, right? We're having an absolute blast right now, but that obviously changes the mindset as it relates to finances and things like that. And like myself and Aspen, my wife, have a couple of things that we're kind of like considering and thinking about right now, right? We've got our first kid coming in July, which we're also stoked about that. And we can't wait to be parents. It's going to be absolutely awesome. And we're in this spot where we're like actively thinking about, okay, we think we'd like to move into a bigger place. We've got the place that we're currently in. And we're saying, okay, well, we could potentially retain this as a rental property and potentially build up liquidity and cash flow that way. And then we also have the business that it's a baby business, right? But it's almost 4 years old now. And the trajectory that the business on is really promising, right? Like the return that we're getting on the business is really good. Simultaneously, obviously, we have like the traditional options of retirement funds, right? Mutual funds, things like that. And so those are just a few of the examples of one of the things that I'm learning, I think, in real time is like, oh, there's no shortage of good options, right? Like there's a lot of good options and there could be even more good options if I just kept my eyes open, right? And so it sounds like what you're saying is the policy statement is kind of the highest conceptual level of a filter that we could run through. How do we make these decisions so they're not all just one-off decisions? Does that feel right, Jeff?
Yes, exactly. A framework for how is your family going to make decisions about money?
And what are the questions that go into the writing of that policy statement for you?
So it would just be those five things. First thing, first bullet point, what are your goals and principles? Your values, right? Second thing, what is the strategy? Or the design of the allocation. What are we trying to do here? How are we going to do it? Third thing is the time frame. Okay, like, you know, that could be sort of what's the time frame for deploying new capital? It could be what's the time frame we're looking for these outcomes? You know, any relevant time frames that matter. And then four is how are we going to execute on this? What's the execution plan? Like, how are we going to actually do this? And then five is, okay, now we've sort of got it up and running. How are we going to maintain it? How are we going to manage it?
Mm-hmm. And it seems like maybe what that policy plan will do, or one of the outcomes that will come from that, is it will divorce the decisions, the one-off decisions, from emotion or impulse. So you're not just getting excited about an idea and saying like, let's do that because I saw something about that on social media or something like that. You're yeah. executing on a proven plan.
Yep, exactly. This is not going to be a scenario of, hey, Alex, well, this super rich household name famous person just did this thing. Shouldn't you do it too? Because that is how Ponzi schemes happen. Well, I don't know. Super rich, successful dude. And this is, you asked me in our last session about myths. This is a myth, okay? We all seem to believe and assume that not even, this statement doesn't even have to be true right here. It's if I perceive you to be more successful than me, then I believe you are smarter than me. And if I copy one of your decisions, it must be good for me. That's insane.
And what's crazy about that too is we'll even do it in arenas outside of their expertise. So we'll say, oh, well, LeBron James gave me, I found out who LeBron James voted for, and now that's informing my view on politics.
Yeah. I'll give you one with money. Okay. Elon Musk puts $1.5 billion in Bitcoin. Okay. So what does our messed up psychology say? Well, hey, the most innovative, successful, wealthy dude on the planet just dumped an amount of money that to me, you might as well have said infinity, into Bitcoin. So therefore, I'm going to take that as a license to go deploy my life savings into random crypto, because clearly that's what the message is I'm supposed to take from Elon. And then I go broke. Versus looking at it unemotionally, going back to our plan, figuring out if crypto even fits in that plan, which maybe it doesn't based on our values and strategies and things. And if it does, and we want to look at what Elon did, and we go, oh, do you know the amount of money he put in there was about equivalent to like 0.5% of his net worth? So, oh, okay, what's your net worth? And you're like, oh, $100 million. Okay, whoa, you're super successful. And you are. What's 0.5%? That's 500 grand, bro. You know, you're worth 10 million. Oh yeah. Yeah. That'd be like you dumping 50 grand into Bitcoin. Okay. So like context matters. Anyway, sorry, you got me off on a tangent.
No, I think that's great. I think it actually connects principally to something that I've just observed in some of the greatest like leaders, guides, mentors in my life, is they're constantly, I'm looking to them for the catch-all one-off answer if I'm not careful. And they're often returning my question with a question that's like, Alex, what do you want? And it sounds like that's a lot of what you're talking about with people, is like, stop worrying about what everyone else is doing. Get really clear with you and the people under your roof about what do y'all actually want, and allow that to inform where you invest. Yeah?
Yes, exactly. 100%. That. And so I'll give you an exercise along those lines, because being clear about what you want, you as an individual, for yourself and your immediate family, you, has nothing to do with me. So I'll give you all one exercise that I have found. This is not going to give you the answer, but it will get the wheels turning. And if you're married, I think it makes a great date night. Maybe you open a bottle of wine and you do this with your spouse. Or if you're thinking about getting married, maybe you do this with the person you're thinking about committing to, because maybe this would be good to know. Write down 101 things that you want in life. Alex, I would love for you to do this and then tell your listeners on a future episode if it was meaningful. But write down 101 things that you want in life. And after you write down 101 things that you want, cross out all but 10. Mm. That will get the wheels turning. Okay. So What's the third thing? Risk. All right. Like, have you heard of this concept of illusory superiority?
I have not. Explain it a little bit.
And basically, there's a fantastic Wikipedia page on it. You can go look it up. But it basically is that we all believe we are above average. Mm. And so we also believe that basically bad things won't happen to us. So like, for example, sitting here right now, I could, if I needed to, imagine, Alex, something bad happening to you or your family. Like, oh, Alex got in a terrible car wreck today or whatever, right? Like my brain can like contemplate the possibility of that. My brain cannot contemplate the possibility of it happening to me.
Mm.
Okay. So the difference in a really mature family who's dealing with creating and maintaining wealth is they're willing to consider the possibility of things, bad things happening to them. And then you just have to look at and go, what risks are out there? You know, can I protect myself with legal structures? Can I transfer the risk to an insurance company or something else? Can I separate and isolate and shield myself from risk? You know, and oftentimes for entrepreneurs, think about this. Are you your biggest asset? I mean, I'll just ask you, Alex, you're talking about building the business you're building. What happens to the financial future you are creating if something happens to you and your ability to create it?
Well, our vision right now for our business is that we've operationalized the way that we create and deliver value by end of September 2024. So that is the march that we're on, right? And we're hustling. Right now, I would say we've made incredible strides on that, right? Incredible strides. I would say I actually believe if I was to get hit by a red truck tomorrow, the business would be hurt. It would be hurt, but I do believe it would survive.
Well, then you're way ahead of the rest. Most people haven't thought of what they should do to protect it, you know, and what would happen if they don't. So here's a simple action item in this category. I'll give you two. Here's a bonus one because of what Alex just shared. So a simple one, this is a boring thing. List out all your insurances. Make sure you're covered properly for the big stuff. And then if you haven't shopped it out in a while, go shop it out and see if you're, overpaying. That's a simple, boring one. One that's a little bit harder is to do what Alex is just talking about, which is create a catastrophe plan. And look, yeah, I can send you a template, but look, you could also just open a Word document and go, write this question at the top. If I die, fill in the blanks, right? And write it out. If I die, my wife needs to know this, employees need to know that, here's how I want this to go, here's how that goes, here's where the passwords are, here's what, I don't write it, just maybe you record a video, I don't know, if I die, it's a real uplifting talk.
Yeah, we have a customer, he employs, I think it's 700 people now across the Northeast. Him and his top leaders have what they call a red truck plan, which is essentially what you're talking about. If you get hit by a red truck tomorrow, what occurs and what will occur? And boy, that clarifies the gaps really fast.
Yeah.
Jeff, for the sake of time, let's jump to number four. What's the fourth pillar?
Fourth thing, and we'll buzz through this because it's probably not anybody's favorite topic, is legal planning. And listen, I used to hate paying for attorneys. Now I view it kind of like insurance, right? I realize that if I'm successful, paying attorneys is not really an option anymore in my life. I'm going to pay attorneys from time to time for different things. However, I get to choose, do I pay them on the front end or the back end? And in my experience, if I invest in it on the front end, the back end cost is much, much less. And if I shortchange it on the front end, the back end cost can be huge. I remember, I've been in and out of different partnerships, and one of them we created, and I just thought I was checking the box. And we spent probably $4,500 on the documents, right? And then when it was time for that to end, it cost probably $200,000 in legal fees to finalize getting it out of it and putting it to bed. And you're going, well, geez, I probably could have just spent, maybe instead of $4,500, maybe I could have even just spent $20,000 or something on the front end and taken slowed down, take a little bit more time and put together a better legal plan on the front end to save me from the back end, you know? Mm. So just realize if you're successful, you're running a company, it's not that you're not going to have attorneys. You're going to have attorneys and you're going to pay them. You just get to choose whether you spend a little bit on the front end or a lot on the back end. Okay. So,
yeah. What is the practical action there? Because I think that can be one that people actually avoid because they don't even know where to get started or what they should have in place, things like that.
Look, I mean, attorneys are specialized, so they're not, it's not like you probably don't want what I'd call a front door attorney that just takes anything that comes to the front door. You kind of want, okay, I need this corporate attorney, this transactional attorney, this estate attorney, this real estate attorney, but, you know, so they're specialized. And, you know, you can find good ones. A lot of times they're state specific, so you might need one in your state. But, you know, the key thing, the takeaway here is to go, look, you know, if I said, what do you want to do today? I'm guessing like go meet with new attorneys is probably not on your list. And so the key here is to go, I understand that if I approach my legal needs with a check the box mentality, that is inserting risk into my life and potentially large, painful experiences that are expensive on the back end of those deals. And I'm rolling the dice. So maybe the front end investment is worth saving me the back end hassle, headache, cost, pain, et cetera. So it's about prioritizing it and going, I understand why I'm going to spend a little bit more time and money here and now to address this. So let's go to the fifth one, because this is a big one. This is about tax. Okay. Tax is literally probably one of your most biggest expenses. And I'll just have everybody do this exercise. It's simple enough that if you're where you can write it down, write this down. If you're driving or something, you know, you can probably do this in your head. Just do this for yourself. What is your taxable income? What is it? Now, take that number, your total taxable income, and multiply that number times 10%. So if you said, oh, I'm making $1 million a year, 10% is 100,000. That number for you, total taxable income times 10%, that number, based on our experience of doing this for tons of entrepreneurs working backstage to solve this problem for them, that number is likely the amount of money that you are overpaying in tax by not having a good tax strategist, by not, you know, stopping and slowing down and thinking about your tax bracket and how you're managing that bracket and what strategies you could deploy and being proactive. That amount of money. And so then you stop and you go, geez, well, if I had an extra 10% back, what could I do with that? You know, that's going to put me on a greater, steeper exponential curve towards crossing my threshold. It's going to do that much more for my legacy and impact. So the action here is, if you don't have a tax strategist, which is very different than a CPA, don't get frustrated with them. Their job is compliance. Okay. You dump on them last year's information, last minute, and expect them to fill out a form. And tax planning is not about filling out the form better. Okay. It's about stopping and going, in the current calendar year, what can we change that would change the information that I give to the CPA next year, so that when they do the compliance function of preparing and filling out the forms, that the outcome of that activity is closer to the result that I would like. That requires us to think ahead and be proactive and set aside time and prioritize it and say, this is worth working on. So when you think back to that number, total income times 10%, if that number, the question for you is that number motivating to you or not? If it's not motivating, cool. Maybe you'd have more of an income problem and just focus on growing your income. Don't worry about this. If that number gets you real fired up, then do something about it.
Okay, so you may have just answered this question. The question was going to be, at what stage is a business owner ready to hire a tax strategist? Is it when they're motivated by the number that they see?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
If that number doesn't motivate you, then just focus on growing your income. If that number makes your blood boil, just go get a tax strategist, which is very different than a CPA. It's someone who is going to proactively engineer solutions and changes that optimize the way that you're structured, the way you're paying yourself, that's making sure you're not missing any of the deductions, that looks to engineer and implement complex solutions that have a significant impact, that leads you to this place of freeing up that number for you to deploy somewhere else in your life.
One more question on pillar five. Is there anything specific you would tell people as they're evaluating tax strategists or options as it relates to that? Like, look for these things, avoid these things.
So yes, I'll answer that a little bit more generically. And I think this is true with any advisor, consultant. I don't care if it's financial advisor, tax strategist, but any consultant or advisor. I firmly believe that the quality of advice is directly correlated to the depth of understanding that advisor has about you. And so what you have to be careful, most careful about, is I think most advisors, most consultants, I don't care if we're talking tax strategist, financial advisor, or any other advisor or consultant, is they're so quick to want to sling an answer and sling a solution. And they're just trying to like, they're more like, hey, I happen to have a few answers or a few ideas or a few strategies or a few products, and I'm really just trying to sell them to as many people as possible. That is not helpful. And that is more likely to get you hurt than it is to help. You need somebody that is going to slow down and say, hold the horses. Like, hey, Alex, if I'm advising you, I need to know everything about you. I want to know where how all of it's connected, about your family. I need to know what keeps you up at night, what you like, what you don't like, what your goals are, what your plans are, priorities, what you have working for you, what you're projecting, you know, what you liked and what didn't work for you in the past, all of it. And the depth of that understanding is going to directly correlate to the quality of advice that you get. And so somebody that comes up and asks you a few questions and then starts telling you an answer, that's a salesperson, and you're going to go through a sales process. And that's like, maybe it helps you, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. We're just throwing darts at that point. You have to be willing to commit to a planning process and a process that evaluates where you are, figures out where you are, where you want to be, and engineers a path to get from here to there. And that's real time consuming work.
Love it. With that, if someone is interested in working with you and your team, where would you point them again, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, on the tax strategy point, look, we have a place you can go. It's talktaxwithjeff.com. And if you want to book a session with us, I'll do the session with you. It's $995, and we absolutely guarantee that if we don't identify at least that much in savings right on that session, right in that meeting, right in that call, if we don't identify more savings than you paid, 100% money back guarantee. Because the savings are there, and we really want to get people started on the right track. So we're willing to put our money where our mouth is. If you want help, you know, get help, whether it's us or somebody else, but do something about it. If that number that you wrote down or that you visualized is painfully motivating.
Yeah, that's right. Very cool. Well, we'll put the link to that in the show notes of this episode as well, if people do want to take advantage of that. Jeff, man, I so appreciate your intentionality, your passion for this topic, and just the way that you and your team serve people in this regard. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, I'm grateful to Jeff for his intentionality, for his investment, and for his perspective in both part one and part two of this conversation. We put all the links that he mentioned and that we discussed in the show notes of this podcast. Y'all know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.